Thanks, Steve. I'm sorry to see that your eyesight's going like that. It did surprise me when I saw all the people here. I was this many people, even though they knew Bob was preaching today. It's very good. For those of you who don't know me, this is the new improved Bill Malone from Phoenix, Arizona. New and improved because I've got some new plumbing inside me and I feel great. I feel better than I have in many, many years. And it's a blessing from God. There's no doubt in my mind. And He gave me a personal kind of little special touch that helped me to know that He was definitely concerned about me and my condition and that my improvement is something that He had a hand in, and I give Him the glory for it. I told Bob I was going to show him an interesting way I have of keeping everybody's attention. I've used it a few times before, and nobody likes to be embarrassed. So what I'm going to do, just to keep your attention, at the end of this sermon, I'm going to ask somebody a question. It'll probably be the first or second or someone of people out there in the audience that I see whose eyes might close a little bit too long. You know, I can tell that they're not just blinking their eyes. But if I see a head nodding, you might be the one called on. Or I might just call someone randomly. Or I might have several questions and several people to call on. So that usually gets people's attention and keeps people's attention. Now, I haven't really done that before and embarrassed somebody, but the fact that there's always a possibility, it still works. When Bob asked me to preach for him this morning, I thought it was kind of neat because we were just a couple weeks ago, I think it was, 2-3 weeks ago, we were standing up together in Phoenix where I had the morning service and he had the evening service. And we were together again in the gospel. The thoughts I want to present this morning are going to be probably pretty short and to the point. I'm not known for long sermons. I'm sure that we can have us out of here before the baptism this afternoon. When I pick up the scriptures and I just like to just start reading, nothing in particular in mind, just want to pick them up and start reading. One of the places that I really like to turn to is the book of James. Now, James is one of the earliest books in the New Testament, one of the earliest writers, James, who was the brother of Jesus. And another interesting thought is James wasn't one of those disciples who followed Jesus throughout his ministry. James was converted by the risen Lord. So he didn't have as much of the first-hand knowledge that some of the other disciples that walked with Jesus for several years would have had. But yet he puts it down in to me, he says more in fewer words than most of the other writers do. These are words that James uses rather than A lot of the early Gospels there use quotes that Jesus made. These are words that James uses. And I want to begin just by beginning right at the very first in the book of James. James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes which are scattered abroad. Greeting. Now, he was talking mostly to the Christian Jews. And he begins, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations or various trials, knowing this, that the trying or the testing of your faith worketh patience." Now, when a person would first read that, I think most of us understand it because we've delved into it a little deeper than just the surface of what it says. How many this morning when you got up, how many of you first thing said, "Lord, okay, we want some trials today. We want some testing of our patience. I want some really tough stuff to happen to me." Because, you know, that's what James is telling us. We should be joyful when that happens. You know, I find it difficult in my life to begin a day with that statement. You know, for one thing, I know that if I made that statement, he's just liable to do it. And I really don't think I need any more trials in my life or any more temptations, because I have enough trouble with the ones I got. So, I didn't start my day that way. Did any of you? Asking for more trials and temptations and tribulations? No, probably not. What if you did? You know, think about it. What if you started a day off asking for that? "Lord, bring them on." What kind of a day do you think you would have? You know, if you started your day that way, I'll bet I could be pretty accurate in saying that, number one, you know that you would not dare go out into the day and begin your day by yourself. You would not want to begin that day knowing that you have prayed for these things, these trials and temptations to come to you to see how you can handle them, unless you had the Lord right there with you. And that's what James is trying to tell us here. Just like when Paul in 2 Corinthians in the, I think it was the 12th chapter, right at the end of the 12th chapter, he talks about, so I don't get it wrong, we'll read that real quick. In verse 10, "Therefore I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong." Paul recognizes that those things that are going to happen to every one of us, you know, none of us here live lives that are free from those things. We see these things constantly in our lives. And it doesn't mean that God doesn't love us or he hasn't answered prayers about delivering us from these things. Our life that we go through is going to be full of these things that are common to mankind, the temptations and the trials. They will be there. They'll never be eliminated, because that's what you and I are going to be judged on, is not how many of these things that we can not confront, but it's how we handle them, because we are going to confront them. And you know, Jesus, when he came this earth, he had his primary purpose for him coming here was not to tell us all these things, but he showed us. He showed us that life isn't going to be fair. And no matter what kind of a life that we live, we are going to experience those same things that are going to be hard for us to go through, and difficult times and illnesses and all manner of afflictions. Throughout the scriptures, we can read about the disciples that follow Jesus and that serve God. Throughout all history, they have suffered severely, but God has supported them. And if we go into our everyday with that thought of, Lord, I hope I don't have any problems today. Well, maybe you won't. But if you go into it knowing that you probably will face the everyday things that seem to be common to mankind, and you do it with that thought that I'm so glad that I don't have to face them alone. What a difference it can make in your life. You know, I gave a testimony once at the youth camp about an experience that I had on this exact same thing. And I'll make it brief, but I want to share it with you. It was a situation that I found myself in. Lack of patience or getting angry too quick, whatever you want to call it. Now, I'm sure none of you have any of those problems, but if you did, you probably, like me, sometimes you can just pray about them and pray about them and pray about them and pray about them, and they seem to still be there. And I had the same problem. I caught myself one day. I was driving to work, and I'm right in the middle of a prayer, and some guy cuts me off, and right mid-sentence in my prayer, it changed drastically from talking to God to talking to this other guy. I won't go into what I said to him, but it was quite different than what I was saying to God. And I stopped and I thought, what a miserable failure I was. How could somebody be talking to God in one breath and then have that change of attitude come upon you of complete disgust for another individual? Within a second it changed. And at that time, then God started talking to me. And he helped me, not in an audible voice, but to my mind. He helped me to understand what this means. And he was telling me, you keep trying to do it by yourself. Or you keep telling me that I need to do it for you. And neither one of those are going to work. But when you team up with God, you can accomplish, and you know the rest of the story, you can accomplish anything that you set out to accomplish, but not by yourself, and not when you sit back and tell God to do it for you. I went through the rest of that day facing the same trials and temptations that I do every day and that you guys do every day. And I had the most beautiful day. Because I made God just a little bit closer to me. I allowed him into my life a little bit more than I had been every day. And I'm sorry to say that it isn't the kind of thing that I constantly do every day since then. I wish it worked that way, and I wish it was that easy, but it's not. You have to physically and spiritually and with your entire being invite God into your everyday life, into your activities, into everything you do and everything you think. And then you can say that prayer. And you can say, bring him on. We're ready. Might not make it through this whole chapter. Let patience have her perfect work, that ye may be perfect and entire, lacking nothing. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. For he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind, and tossed. For let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. I want to drop down to verse 12. Blessed is the man that endureth temptation. For when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord hath promised to them that love him. In the things that I read and that I think Jesus, the simplification of what Jesus was trying to teach us was, take note from the things that I do. The things that, you know, he tells us, the things you see me do, that we should be doing those same things. And he experienced in his few short years of life on this earth, he experienced probably just about everything that you and I will experience, and probably a lot more. He felt the same things that we feel, the same emotions that we have. And he showed us how we should react to those things. And when we study him out, when we look at him, we see that lots of times our reactions are quite a bit different than what his are, what his were. You know, what's that motto that's on your license plate? I think it used to be. Is it still there? Is this the show me state? When you see that on a license plate, from here on out, every time you see that, you're going to remember something. Not because I told you to, it's just going to be human nature from now on. You're going to see that and you're going to think, that's what Jesus was telling me. He showed me. He showed you the way that things are supposed to be done. And you guys live in the show me state. And he's telling each one of you, you can tell somebody the way things are, but what really sticks in their minds, it's when you show them. When you live the kind of life that Jesus wants us to live and respond to things the way that he responded, then you'll be showing others of the hope and the light that is within you. And what a difference that'll make, not just in somebody else's life that is looking at you with a magnifying glass because you're a Christian, but they're going to be looking at you, and you're going to be able to go through this life a little bit differently, knowing that you have to be on your best behavior because you're on display. Each one of us are. And when you see that little saying on that license plate, "Show me state," remember that that's what Jesus was saying. That's what he was doing. He was showing us how to do things. You know, I'm not going to go into a lot of them, but there was one that just really sticks in my mind. One of the examples of the many that Jesus gave us. One that I particularly have trouble with, and maybe you guys do too. Do you remember the picture, this scene in the garden when the soldiers were coming to take Jesus away? And who's up there in the front but Judas? You know, boo. And how did Jesus respond to him? You know, the first thing he said to him, well, I don't know if it's the first thing, but the important thing that he said to him that I want you to remember, that is so untypical of what you and I might say if we knew that there was a traitor there that was coming to turn us over to the authorities unjustly, like Judas did. Jesus' statement to Judas was, he used the word friend, and then he spoke to him and asked him why he was doing this. But he called him friend. You know, that's not a real strong word maybe, but in a situation like that, that's a powerful word. And a very good example for each one of us to remember when we're in a situation like that. And you can't do this by yourself. You got to have God with you to be able to make that statement. When you want to think you have the right to be angry at somebody, Jesus had the right. He had the right to be plenty angry. Instead, use the word friend, or the thought in your mind. When you're not going to be speaking to him audibly, you can still keep that thought, friend. I want to read a couple of verses in John. First of all, in the 13th chapter, verse 15, "For I have given you an example, that ye should do as I have done to you." Now, he was talking to his disciples in this particular instance about the foot washing. But I think this statement is a much more far-reaching statement. And we can read basically the same thing many other places in the Scriptures. That he is the example. The things that we see him do, we should be doing also. And again, in chapter 14, verse 12, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me, the works that I do shall he do also. And greater works than these shall he do, because I go unto my Father." And we can read the same thing in 3 Nephi, in the 12th chapter, in verse 34. Do the same works that Jesus does. And that means respond the same way that Jesus responded to handle situations the way Jesus handled them. Can you imagine standing in front of your accusers, knowing that you're innocent, knowing that you could call 12 legions of angels? Yeah, we're going to show this guy. But resisting it, because you knew that was not the right way to respond in that particular situation. It was completely unfair, just like this life in time and time again is completely unfair as far as our way of thinking goes. But yet, the response that Jesus gave is that response that I hope each one of us can remember, that we have that responsibility to show others just like Jesus showed to us. To show them there's a difference. That His teachings have made a big difference in my life and in your life. I want to just read some of the verses that I have highlighted in the book of James, just in my Bible. In verse 17, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. In other words, God doesn't change. And I'm sure glad of it. I'm sure you are too. What a mess religion would be if God did change. Unfortunately, there's a lot of religions out there where their God does change. But the God I worship, and I know the God you worship, does not change. Some of the attributes that we're supposed to have in our lives and things that Jesus told us and showed us, James references too. Verse 19, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. Verse 22, but be ye doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. You know, James says it so beautiful over at the end of this chapter 2 as far as our understanding of being doers of the word. You know, and that's another aspect of the show me portion of it. Over in I'll read several verses over there in the second chapter, starting with verse 14, where it talks about works. What doth it profit, my brethren, though a man say he hath faith and have not works, can faith save him? If a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you say unto them, depart in peace, be ye warmed and filled, notwithstanding ye give them not those things which are needful to the body, what doth it profit? Even so, faith, if it hath not works, is dead, being alone. Yea, a man may say, thou hast faith, and I have works. Show me thy faith without thy works, and I will show thee my faith by my works. Thou believest that there is one God, thou doest well. The devils also believe and tremble. But wilt thou know, O vain man, that faith without works is dead? The works are those things that the weak or something like that. Those are necessary. But those aren't going to get you into heaven by themselves. But when you have the right combination, just like facing this life, going out those doors and facing this life and all those trials and temptations with the right combination of your dedication and God's help. That's the combination that we have to make it through this life. We're not going to make it any other way. You can profess your belief in Jesus Christ and it's important. And it is, you can't make it into heaven without that profession. It is absolutely necessary. But that by itself isn't going to get you there. And I think most all of you, I'm sure all of you know that. Our whole church is based on the premise that there's more to it than just having faith and professing our belief in Jesus Christ. There's so much more to it. But that still has to take place. That comes first. Then come the works. Then come the things that you tell me and then you show me. And James says it well. I really like the way he words that. Seest thou how faith wrought with his works, and by his works was made faith made perfect? In verse 26, for as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also. James talks quite a bit about the tongue, how it can get you into trouble. And I'm sure none of us here have that problem, but, you know, if it was a problem, he talks about how the tongue, in verse 8 in chapter 3, but the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. You know, the tongue can kill somebody spiritually. I mean, it can do things that devastate a person's life much more than anything you could do physically. And you could probably, and probably are, painting scenarios in your own minds how that could take place. It can happen. And it has happened. We probably know of instances in our own experiences where something like that has happened. We have to be very careful with those things that we say. Verse 10, chapter 3. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be. In the fourth chapter, verse 4, James says, the friendship of the world is enmity with God. Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. You know, that's a pretty harsh statement. But I believe what he's saying and what Jesus showed us is that we must be in the world. We don't have any choice there. But to endorse those things that are not right, and it's so easy to vicariously endorse those things nowadays. Sometimes without you really even noticing it right away. There's a lot of comedy shows on TV nowadays. Probably 99% of them, I wouldn't give you 2 cents for. They are vile. They are, well, I was going to use the word teaching, and actually I guess they are. They're teaching that sin is okay. Some sorts of sin are okay. And when we don't physically take some sort of action, some sort of stand against those things, even if it's just click it off. Well, push the button nowadays, I guess. Remote control. Turn it off. Or change it. Those things don't belong. Those things that are evil, endorsing evil, do not belong in our lives. Things that might seem pretty tame don't come right out and endorse sin. They're easy to get us hooked on. But the very second that you recognize that's not of God, He certainly could not endorse something like that. You have a responsibility to yourself and to your household. Do something about it. Do not let those things run your life. Do not be a friend of the world. That type of friend. Verse 7, submit yourselves therefore to God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. Draw near to God and he will draw near to you. You know, I think sometimes, I know I do, and I think perhaps each of you from time to time, I don't know, I gotta be careful in how I word this, but I think we might rely on God too much. We might be asking God to do things that we should be doing. He can help us. And He wants to help us. And He's told us to ask for these things. You know, ask, and seek, and knock. Jesus told us those things. But be careful, because you cannot sit back and tell God, this is what I want, and use Him as a vending machine. A lot of us have a tendency to do that in our lives. I know I have from time to time. And I hope that when I do, that God helps me to recognize those things and resist them and overcome them and seek His will and ask His guidance and direction. I'm going to go ahead and close. There's a lot of material there. And you've probably read it as many times as I have. But you know, I heard the statement, I can't remember where it was, Sunday school or at Bob's house this morning. There's not a time that goes by that you don't read something and get something more out of it. No matter what it is. In reading the scriptures and studying, you can read it 100 times. And there's more to gather out of the same thing. Sometimes it just depends on how receptive you are, how prepared you are to receive those things. I want to read just the last verse, because I rely on this last verse an awful lot in James. The last two verses. Brethren, if any of you do err from the truth, and one convert him, let him know that he... They're getting blurry for some reason. He who converteth the sinner from the error of his way. Shall save a soul from death and shall hide a multitude of sins. I pray for each of us in our lives that as we're showing others the faith that we have by our actions and our lives, that it'll touch the heart of someone. Perhaps someone who's slipping away slowly. Perhaps somebody that's gone over the deep end. Perhaps somebody that's just searching and just needs just a little bit more to convince them. There's so many things that we can do in our lives to be of service to God and to others. You know, I love that there's a scripture that our brother Placido has over his doorway at his house. I mean, there's no doubt in Placido's house, when you see it, there's no doubt what kind of a man this man is. It's a quote, I think it's out of first chapter of Moroni, verse 49. When you're in the service to your fellow man, you're only in the service to God. Or something like that. But if we lose our temper at our fellow man, it's no different than letting God down. You know, it might be losing your temper with God. Each one of His children are just as important. No matter how we might value them, you know the kind of value that God has on them. Every man and woman and child is just as important to Him as you and I. And I hope that we can show others in this world and in our lives how important they are to us.